Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A woman whose intelligence, personal as well as her experience with the business of intelligence, is nonpareil, as far as I'm concerned, is our guest for a full hour today. She is Claire Lopez. She is Vice President for Research and Analysis at the Center for Security Policy these days, but has had a career in intelligence, including as a clandestine service officer in the Central Intelligence Agency. I'm very proud to say that she is the co-author with me of a new book titled See No Sharia, Countering Violent Extremism and the Disarming of America's First Lines of Defense. Claire Lopez, welcome. It's good to have a chance to talk with you about this joint project and to otherwise illuminate the challenges that we discuss in it. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Well, thank you, Frank. I'm glad to be with you.
I guess I'd start with sort of defining some fundamental terms here, Claire. Let's begin with Sharia itself. What does that mean? Are there various definitions of it? Does it mean basically whatever you want it to mean, or is there some particular rendering of it that is authoritative?
Well, Sharia is Islamic law. It is fixed. It is written down. It was codified by the senior scholars of Islam in the couple hundred years or so after we are told Muhammad died in the year 632. So, say by the 900s, by the 10th century, Sharia, the law, as well as the documents that it is derived from, that is, the Quran and the Hadith, primarily, were codified by the scholars. They were written down. They were other copies, other versions were literally destroyed, burned. So it is a fixed set of law that governs Islam. It governs every single action of a Muslim or a Muslim entity, like, let's say, a company. No, there are not different versions of Sharia. There is only one that is taught by the scholars in the universities, by the ulema, the senior clerics of Islam in the various countries. It is the only version written in the textbooks, including in the madrasas across the United States at Islamic centers and mosques. But it is enforced differently and to different degrees by different governments.
And I think it's fair to say that there are people in the Muslim world who may not have any firsthand knowledge of or experience with the requirements of Sharia. They may call themselves Muslims. How are they regarded by those who are, however, the authorities of the faith, say at Al-Azhar University and the like, Claire Lopez?
Well, I think it's likely that most Muslims in the world have some familiarity with Sharia, even if it comes to them only through someone else, like, let's say, the local imam at their mosque. They may not themselves even be literate, let's say, or have the knowledge to be able to read, to understand books of Sharia law. But most Muslims in the world are taught in some measure through their families, through their mosques, through their imams, what Sharia demands of them. And I think it's fair to say probably that most of them pretty much accept what they're taught. Whether they actually carry out the obligations of Sharia, which include, unfortunately, things like jihad against the non-Muslim, that is a whole other question. But I think that a belief system like Islam that has actually survived now for more than 13 centuries and has spread to include something like 1.6 billion adherents worldwide, that could not possibly happen unless the vast majority of Muslim mothers and fathers and teachers passed this along to their children over the centuries, and those children accepted it either passively or otherwise.
Our guest is Claire Lopez, Vice President for Research and Analysis at the Center for Security Policy and co-author of our new book, See No Sharia. Claire, you introduced another term there that I think it's important to define right at the get-go as well, and that is jihad. You've indicated that it is the duty of Sharia-adherent Muslims to engage in it. What exactly does it entail?
Well, according to the books of law, and as you know, one of the ones we like to use most often is called Reliance of the Traveler, or Umdat al-Salik, a 14th century book of Shafi law, as it happens. The definition
It's not just a personal preference of ours. It has some standing, this book, The Reliance of the Traveler.
Oh, absolutely it does. I'm saying a preference because many of us find it convenient to use it. It is readily available at Amazon. It is divided into neat chapter headings that include one on jihad, but it is absolutely authenticated, certified, if you will, by the senior scholars of Islam, including Ad al-Azhar and other senior ulema around the Muslim world, and as well by the senior authenticating Muslim Brotherhood organization in the United States, which is the International Institute of Islamic Thought, sometimes called the IIIT. But in the section on jihad, it says that jihad is warfare against non-Muslims. And, of course, warfare can be many things, violent included, but not exclusively. And so when we talk about the global jihad movement, we're talking about a movement that includes the violent terrorism of an Al-Qaeda or Islamic State, Hamas, Hezbollah, but also all those forces that support it in any way, including by speaking, writing, broadcasting, certainly by funding, or even parents who teach jihad to their children, parents who send their children to a madrasa to learn jihad and sharia. Those are all ways of supporting jihad.
Now, Claire, there is a rather well-established narrative in the West, and I'd be interested in your thoughts as to how it has become so well-established, but that holds jihad actually is about personal struggle to become a better Muslim. In your readings of texts like Reliance of the Traveler and of course, the Quran itself and the other sacred text upon which Sharia is founded, is there a basis for viewing or understanding or practicing jihad in that manner as opposed to what you've described as the warfare against the non-believers?
No, none whatsoever. It is true that the Arabic word jihad means struggle, but within Islamic law, there is only a definition of jihad as warfare against the non-Muslim. There is in some hadiths, which are considered weak hadiths, of course, the sayings, the recountings of the actions of Muhammad, there are weak hadiths, meaning not given much authority by the scholars, that talks about jihad as a spiritual struggle. And indeed, perhaps, and we can certainly hope, that this is the way many Muslims choose to obey their faith. But in fact, jihad is warfare. There is no other definition of jihad in the law, in the Sharia. And indeed, as we know, the entire law itself, Sharia, comes from the second chronological set of verses in the Quran that Muslims believe were revealed to Muhammad after he moved, after the hijra from his home city of Mecca to Medina. And it is during that period of time in Medina when the more violent and the more aggressive verses of the Quran came to be. And it is from those verses that Sharia is derived, and therefore from that set of Sharia, the laws about jihad.
Claire, we have to pause for a moment. When we come back, I want to talk a bit more about the forms of jihad that are much in evidence now, if you know what to look for, in the West, including inside the United States government. That and more with my colleague Claire Lopez right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.